Okay, we're continuing the Bavli. We're just finishing chapter 19, the idea of Yira. And we talked about the Bas Kol yesterday. So, let's see, what was the last thing we were on? So, we said this idea of Tshuva, the Bas Kol that comes within your own neshama, tells you to do Tshuva. And that's a very good voice to hear. That's a voice we have to, we should get accustomed to listening to, but that only comes when we're in a world of silence. But a person who's busy, rushing, and noisy, etc., etc., that Bas Kol gets swallowed up in all the noise. Yes, we ended off with Mikolos Maim Rabim. He said, from all the noise, but still, it's got to be Adir Bamarom Hashem. It's got to be the gloriously elevated Hashem. Where Shabbos is above all that noise, and that's where we ended. The whole idea of Shabbos being a very quiet day, the arrival of Shabbos should come in extremely quiet, right? If that's especially on Shabbos when you get the neshama yisera, you get the neshama yisera. So that's, I mean, it's going to be even a greater chance to pick up on the neshama and to really hear the message of tshuva, which is what Shabbos is all about. To return to Hashem. So if that's the day where it's supposed to happen, so it's certainly going to be on a day that's extremely quiet. So I'm saying, you know, a noisy house on Erev Shabbos is not a house where you're going to gain the most on Shabbos. If it's very quiet as Shabbos is coming and you're contemplating and meditating about what Shabbos is going to bring into your life, then you've got a good chance to make the most out of that Shabbos. Alright. So, similarly, we have another concept, you know, although we're a bit away from it, you know, Purim, on the other hand, Purim is the loudest day of the year, right? It's a day of noise. Why is it such a loud day? You put on your disguise, and what you're looking at with that disguise is, you know, how I present myself to the world, right? That's my disguise. And that's not really me. In other words, you dress up in terms of the phoniness of the whole year, and that's, you know, and the noise that's outside is meant to be outside. It's like Lahavdol, you know, Lahavdol on Yom Kippur. You have the Sor LaZazel, the goat you throw over the side. So, you know, you got to throw something out. So you laugh at the noise and the disguise of the external. Because that belongs to the world of the fake, belongs to the world of the make-believe, it's all a disguise. And on Purim, you come to the realization that all year long, you think that that's who you are. But that's really only the external person. And you think you're a chash of a businessman. And you think you're successful this and a successful that, but you're all wrong. Right? The whole year long, you think you're sober, but really the whole year long, you're drunk. You're drunk with a feeling of this externalness. So that's the whole idea of Ad Lo Yada, until you really don't know who you are, until you really see who you really are, right? And therefore, the drunkenness of Purim is meant to get you to see the deeper person who you really are. But even then, on Purim, you've got to find the quiet once you've taken off the mask, right? So it's a similar idea. But it's the focus on the external, how false that external is. As opposed to Yom Kippur, on the other hand, which is such a quiet day, how true the internal is. That's why it's, you know, it goes all hand in hand, Yom Kippur and Purim. Purim, we focus, look at all these externals, look what you're getting all nervous about. Look what you're getting all excited about all year long. That's crazy, that's nothing, that's noise, that's outside. So to the degree you could get that out, on the other hand, Yom Kippur is the flip side, where you look at what's really inside. They go hand in hand. So that's the concept over here. Okay, let's just finish off the last couple. We're in page Resh Beis, the last couple small paragraphs. Hayira hine kol sheket benefesh adam. Yira comes from the silent voice in the soul of a person. Shal manas lishmoso yeshorach lotzeis machitzoni shal ara shal nefesh. In order to hear it, you got to get out of the external noise. A person has to be pure, he has to go softly, reflective, edel, that has to be. Hadvar mechav amukim. These are very broad words. With reinu kanal yirak nisayin lahamid es suras hadvar boifen klol meod. And what we've discussed is just a little taste, a little test to get us to see what's going on over here in a general way. Losay suras chashiva eich tzarich lios hamahalcha tenishalom, to give you a good vision of what is the way we should eventually be going. Soft, quiet way. Hashem should help us that we should be able to reach this pathway of the body, to leave from the pathway of the body and enter the pathway of the living neshama, and that way we'll get to the final stage, which is Dveikus Hashem. Okay, so that's enough for Yira right now. Basically saying it's going to be a very hard task. And now moving into Perek Chaf, which is the parak of Avas Hashem, the love of Hashem. Now, if you recall, many moons ago...
Rabbi, there's one...
Yes, sir.
We got over, but I don't know why they're leaving. The promotion of Rome prevents the soul of the spirit.
The prevention of what?
The
prevention of what?
The promotion of Rome.
Rome, what is Rome?
Rome.
R-O-M-E?
I don't know, that's what I have here. Promotion of Rome prevents the sound of the spirit.
Right.
I don't know what that means.
It's a quote from Yoma. Makes sense.
Quote from Yoma.
Rome is noise.
Well, okay.
I don't know what it means.
This is a new version over here. It's not my book. I like that.
He said the second version that he sent us, that this translator sent us, he said he refers to some sources that aren't in the original. Not the original.
Okay. Well, again, Rome is noise. Rome is lots of noise and you know, the Roman games. It's a symbolism. It's a symbolism.
All right.
Rome is a lot of noise. You go to the Roman games, the Olympics, noise, you know, could substitute that for a hockey game. The noise of a hockey game. If you go to a hockey game, believe me, you're not going to find your soul in any hockey games. Any sporting events, you won't find your soul. You know, maybe it's a place to go on Purim, but not in a place any other time. You know, that doesn't quite fit in unless you're trying to do outreach with people. There's no place for it. Right? Okay, Avas Hashem. Now, if you recall, as we're building the structure of the human being, let's see if we can go over the steps now. The first step is what? To know that there is a creator. That was the first step, which will take months and months and months. The second step is what? To know that Hashem is right next to you. Right next to you. Okay, the third step is to understand the Hashkoch of Hashem, the divine supervision of Hashem, which leads you to the fourth step, which is Tefillah. And now he talked about the fifth step of Yira. However, if you recall, after he left the second step, before the third step, he said, but the truth of the matter is, you're only going to really be happy with this idea that Hashem is next to you if you love Hashem. If you don't love Hashem, then what is such a great thing of Hashem being next to you? It's like having the KGB with their bugging devices, listening to everything you're saying. That's not exactly, you know, Mother Russia's right in your house. Thank you very much. So unless you really love Hashem, that feeling of His being next to you is not going to be a very happy feeling. And now that he's said as well in this past chapter that even coarse individuals like ourselves can come to loving Hashem much easier than fearing Hashem, right? So now is the appropriate time for Avas Hashem, and the reason he's delayed it for so long is because it's really, he's going to spend a lot of chapters on this concept and how the difficulties involved. It's going to really take up just about the rest of the book, which is interesting. In the first book, he spent a lot of more time on some of the earlier levels, but when he came to Avas Hashem in the first time around, it's just one little itty bitty chapter and not really a lot of depth to it. It was kind of compared to the depth he gave to the other topics, the Avas Hashem topic, and I guess, you know, he had that in mind, wasn't done so thoroughly. So here we're going to get a very, very thorough treatment of Avas Hashem and how we how we balance that against Yisurim and suffering and all these things that prevent us from loving Hashem, which, as I mentioned last night, is really a critical, I mean, it's critical for ourselves, and it's very critical in terms of parenting, to being a good parent. You know, a child has to feel loved. And if a child doesn't feel loved, you're not going to be able to get anything accomplished with them. All the skills you're going to learn aren't going to work at all if the kid doesn't feel loved. Kid's not going to feel loved if you don't feel loved. And how are you going to feel loved? Who's loving you lately as a parent? You know, as you get older, you realize all you get in life is responsibilities. You know, the older you get, the less you do anything for yourself. You gotta this responsibility, that responsibility. Then when the kids grow up, you still gotta support them. And then you got responsibility with grandchildren and this and that. And it's, you know, you never can really do what you want, that's, you know, as it were. And there's not a lot of people showering love upon you. It really does. And the older you get, the less people. You know, okay, when you were little, your parents loved you, but they're gone, so they don't love you. And they're not around to love you, and it gets less and less, and you have to become more of your own source of finding love, and it's only going to come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's only going to come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you don't learn how to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you don't teach your child how to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and all the skills, as we'll see, as we'll read, these skills that are necessary for one to develop in order to love Hashem, you will not be able to impart that upon your children. Your children are not going to learn to love, to feel loved. Even if you love them, they may not feel loved. And you have to do things to help them feel that love. Once they feel that love, then you don't have any problems. If the child really, really knows that you love them, 95% of discipline issues have been solved. The parenting issues have been solved. Yeah? So now you can ask the question you wanted to ask last night. Go ahead. Because you heard it the second time already. Go ahead.
Love of Hashem is very important, and our feeling love of Hashem and connecting back is extremely important to function properly. But there's lots of secular people in this world who are very loving parents, and they teach their children proper love, and their kids give it back. And unfortunately, they don't have a tremendous connection to Hashem, but they give a lot of love, and they teach it, and they give it back. And it's an important thing in their lives, but they're missing love of Hashem. That's a higher level, but
so, okay, so that's a good question. What about the goyim who love? So I would say, first of all, a lot of that really isn't love, A. B, you'll see very shortly, they're only capable of one type of love. They're not capable of a deeper kind of love. And that one, they're not, and we'll see shortly, we're going to read, where the Jew and the goy are part ways very strongly. So that's why this is like a critical thing, and that's what I mentioned last night in this week's Parsha, where you find that, you know, Rivka asked Yaakov to do an extremely difficult thing, to dress up like Esav and try to steal the bracha, which is something that Yaakov would no way would ever want to do. It's so against his nature. He did not want to do this. And this was such a critical growth stage in his life, in his development, that he had to do to develop the real meat of Emes. Had he not done that, he never would have been the Yaakov he could have been. And how did he do it? His mother told him to do it. No, I don't know. Not everything your parent asks you to do, you're going to do, especially things that are difficult. So what made him do it? So I suggested that's what the beginning of the parsha, that little innocuous statement, was so important. It says Yitzchak loved Esav because of the deer meat in his mouth, and Rivka oheves es Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. So, like, big deal. What came out of that pasuk? What came out of that? So that's a nice fact. This one loved this one, or this one loved that one more. So what does that tell us? The answer is, it paid off big time. You know, this was, this event, Rivka, oheves, what's oheves mean? Present tense. Loves him. Continuous present. Means from the day he was born, for the first 63 years of his life, Yitzchak loves Yaakov. Loves him. Rivka loves Yaakov, right? For 63 years, Rivka loves Yaakov. Can you imagine what that means on her level, what it means to love Yaakov? So 63 years of loving Yaakov. Then when she tells Yaakov, now go do something you don't want to really do, even though there's initial reluctance, but she says, don't worry, I will take the curse because I love you. my mother loves me, I'll do whatever she asks me to do. And he suffered for 20 years because of listening to his mother. But that was the right thing to do. Right? So, you know, you'll see if a child really knows that you love him, then they'll do whatever it takes. And that's where it'll pay off. That's not why you're doing it. Again, what are you telling your kid to do already? Of all the things that Rivka ever asked, you think she needed anything from Yaakov? She said, I want you to be a good Jew. To be the good Jew, you have to do something I know you really don't want to do. Tatala, you don't want to masquerade as Esav. You're an honest guy. You don't think this is honest. But I'm telling you, this is the biggest honesty in the world, and you have to trust me on this. Not everybody trusts a parent. You can't trust someone unless you know they love you so much. They would never, ever want anything bad for you. And even if you think it's bad, but they know better. So you okay, I love you, so I'll do it. I think that's Mamish, one of the most important messages of this week's Parsha. Right? While you find Yitzhak's love for Esav was a different kind of love. And he tried also with how he could, but it was different. So if we can learn this love, first of all, it's going to be good for us. Right? There's not a lot of loving going on lately. But if we can master that, then it's something we can teach to our children. And we'll see that all the skills you're going to need to learn how to love Hashem, these are skills that our children should pick up as well. Yes, Sammy?
The same mother didn't show the same amount of love to Esav. So how does that relate to each other?
How should
Esav relate to his mother?
Okay, because you know what the truth of the matter is? She didn't have the right... She knew eventually, she knew already from the Nevuah that he was going to be a Rasha. She knew he was going to be a Russia.
How could you justify something like that?
You know, again, there's different levels. She was nice to him, this and that. But remember what Ava really means, as we'll see. Ava really means being at one with the other person. Being totally at one with that other person. And Esav was not the one to be totally at one with. On the other hand, Yitzhak had more of that personality to be with him. And Yitzhak loved him greatly. Yitzhak loved him greatly. You know, it's the vort. I think the vort is, you know, not every child will you instinctively want to love, which isn't that terrible. That's why you got two parents. And you'll find that one parent is able to do more than the other parent. There is a reason why there's two parents in this scenario here. Why do you need to have two parents? Just have one parent. You know, one parent will love. So what do you? But you know, not every parent is a perfect match for the other kid. You know, you have the mida. Remember, all midos come from either chesed or gvura. Chesed or gvura, and usually each spouse specializes in one over the other. You know, you don't have to. You know, listen, you're gonna want to try to love all your kids, but you're not gonna necessarily feel connected with all your kids in the deepest way. You're not. The one kid has a totally different personality than you. And you don't feel that bonded with that child, and that it's not your fault. It's a hard thing to do, and not necessarily it's an easy one. And a lot of times you have a situation where one spouse really is not the better one to address this issue in the house, so they defer to the other spouse. Between the two spouses, you should have enough of a range of midos that you should be able to handle both kids, all the kids, with two. Now, Yaakov was able to do it as a single parent because he already had the midah of Tiferes, which is incredibly unique, rare that any one human being can hold that. But most can't. So it's not, on the simple level, who's gonna play, with the boys? The father's gonna play with the boys. Who's gonna knock it around with the guys? You know, as the father is more adept at that, who's going to take the girls to buy clothes? I mean, it's going to be the mother. I mean, let's be honest. That's the normal way it should be. There are certain things where a father does certain things, a mother does other things. The personality that Esav had, Yitzhak was more adept at handling that personality. He's more adept. They had similar natures in that area, and Yitzhak would be the better one to spend more time with him to help him develop as best as possible. And for Rivka, it didn't quite work. And even Yitzhak had, considering the Russia he was dealing with, he had a moderate amount of success. Moderate amount. He did ask Esav to, whatever he asked of Esav, Esav did. Even though it wasn't for L'shem Shemayim reasons. You know, and that ultimately you'll see in a second it all fits in real nicely, because he's going to say that a goy can only love for ulterior motives, and only a yid can love altruistically. Since Esav is the ultimate goy, so the only love level could be on an ulterior motive level. While and that's what it says. He loved him because tzayit b'piv, because the dearment was in his mouth. In other words, can never get going to go so far with that loving relationship. Distance in the goyim and the yidden. The goyim, they love each other, but they won't take a hit for each other. They won't really, if it's something they really don't want to do, they're not going to do it. They won't, most of the time they're not going to do it. You know, I love you and I'll let you do whatever you want. Go to Woodstock, do what you want. You know, that's you got such a generation. You know, who am I to say what's right and what's wrong, and the kids should listen to me. They have these loving relationships, but just don't tell me what to do. Well, a Yiddish relationship, they have a love relationship, and the mother tells you what to do, and you do what you're told to do. And that plays itself out. That plays itself out. Esav loved his father to the extent that he knew, you know, why was Esav so good in Kibbutz Avim? He was the best in the whole world in Kibbutz Avim. Nobody in the history of the world ever came close to Esav's ability to Kibbutz Avim. Why? For only one reason, the Mefarshim explained. Because it was for his benefit. Because he knew that if he would honor his father this way, his children would honor him this way. If you see, and that's true. It's true. Now, you could do that for altruistic reasons or for selfish reasons. You know, if you want to make sure that your kids are going to take good care of you when you're old and frail, let them see how you treat your parents when they're old and frail. If you ship them off to nursing home, you can expect that when you get older too. You know, and you call him once a month, that's about what you can expect from your kids. So Esav didn't want that. Esav wanted his kids to respect him. So it's worth it to be nice to his dad and respect his father, because at the end will pay off. So he genuinely loved his father for ulterior motives. And we'll talk about this all coming up. It's all coming up. So that's the kind of relationship that they had. So, no, really, really what Yitzhak wanted his son to be a tzaddik. And I'm sure he said, you know, you really want to be a tzaddik, and you wanted this, you wanted that. But Esav still would respond with love to the father on an ulterior motive way. So, okay, I want to give you the brachas, so go hunt some deer meat for me. Okay, Dad, I'll hunt some deer meat. And he wears the nice clothes that he only wears when serving his father and this and that. Because this mitzvah paid for him. He felt at the end of the day he's going to get something out of this, right? And that's where when he didn't get anything out of it, he felt terrible. I lost the blessing. I lost everything. What's going on? And at the end of the day, Yitzhak still gave him a blessing, because Yitzhak did love him too. And he gave him a blessing. He gave him a blessing for what will suit him. But that love went only so far. Esav would not change his life for his father. Esav would not change his life for his father. Because, admittedly, the deck was stacked against. I mean, Esav had a tough job ahead of himself. He was given the biggest Yetzer Hara imaginable, and he couldn't deal with it. He couldn't deal with it. But and you learn another point from this story. No matter how good a parent you are, you could have a kid who turns out to be a Russian. You know, you're not going to find parents better than Yitzhak and Rivka. You're not in this generation, right? And was destined. You have a kid with a big yetzer, with big challenges, and he will ultimately fail. You can be sure Yitzhak invested years in this kid. He invested years in this kid. He tried whatever he could. Again, you know, maybe he didn't know the latest sophisticated parenting methods, place, whatever. But whatever the reasons is, they gave a lot of effort. And I'm sure Rivka, I'm sure, didn't ignore him, but she didn't feel this bonding with him. So she left it to Yitzhak to bond with him. And that would be the better one to bond. You don't have to feel bad. You don't have to feel bad if you really feel closer to certain kids than other kids. You don't have to feel bad. Just don't show it. Just don't show it. You know, you outwardly, you know, you don't show it. But eventually, even Esav, on his lower level, he still did certain things for his father because he loved him. But the ultimate changes didn't happen because the deepest love didn't exist there. Well, Rivka and Yaakov had that deepest love, and then it was able to happen. Yeah.
As far as it finds, a child who totally disrespects his mother's wishes, yet he buys her presents as being a child who gets the most respected child. It sounds like a tremendous contradiction.
again, how does he resolve this contradiction? A child who does the opposite lifestyle that the parent wants. But the answer is, Ace was very smart. He hid it from his father to a great degree. What's after the mother? He didn't respect. He respected his father.
Keep it up.
Yeah,
but that's
the
not
father.
What all commentaries say. All what? Commentaries say he showed the most respect to his parents.
Okay.
So first of all, he
okay.
didn't. Because the rabbi just defined, he totally disrespected his parents'
wishes. So those
there.
Wishes, again,
right.
those
that's
wish,
a disrespect.
That's a disrespect more to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to them. Whenever he dealt with his parents, he spoke respectfully. There's two issues here. There's the halachic aspect of Kibud Av V'Aim, and then there's a more global aspect, right? Kibud Av V'Aim is a pretty narrowly focused mitzvah. You're broadening it now. The mitzvah is, it's halachas, what kibud kavod is, what yira is, get them a drink of water, don't contradict them, don't argue with them, don't corroborate what they say, don't sit in their place, stand up for them. That's that mitzvah. So that Esau was perfect. He was perfect. Now, you know, do what your parents want, that's beyond the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. Alright? That already is beyond. You know, for example, a different way, right? Your parents do not want you to go to yeshiva. And you want to go to yeshiva, you don't have to listen. Alright, Kibud Av V'Aim, because it's a great, that's beyond Kibud Av V'Aim. So even if he was a Rasha, right? Remember, Kibud Av V'Aim is one of 613 mitzvahs, it's not all 613. Your question is almost assuming that Kibud Av V'Aim is all 613 mitzvahs. So what do you mean to say? If I do all the mitzvahs Kibud Av V'Aim, but I go off the derech, did I not fulfill the mitzvah Kibud Av V'Aim? You did. You can't take away from that mitzvah. He's a bum, he's a hippie, he's a this, he's a that. When he comes to the house, he's a mensch. He's respectful to his parents, he does whatever they want, he gives them rides to the doctor, he speaks soft to them, he defers to them, he does everything for them. You can't say he didn't do the mitzvah. Now, of course, you know, beyond that is called nachas. Giving them nachas isn't part of Kibud Av V'Aim. Hey, you want to give nachas to your parents? Well, nachas I can't give you because I married a shiksa. Do you mean to say a guy marries a shiksa, he can't do Kibud Av V'Aim? You see from this, fakert. I mean, if anything, you learn from Esav exactly how narrowly defined Kibud Av V'Aim is. He married shiksas. But he still was given the greatest title of the best Kibud Av V'Aim. Because when in that house, he respected his parents. He did everything his parents... In my house, it's a different story. In my house, I got my shiks, I got my this, I got everything. But in front of you, I have to give you respect. Right. Now, of course, so in terms of the actual performance, no one did it better than him. It wasn't L'Shem Shemayim. But if you just measure physical activities of Kibud Av V'Aim, he did more than anybody else did. Right? And we have to try to get our physical acts. Now that is beyond that. There's nachas and other things. Okay, he didn't excel in that. There's no mitzvah of giving nachas to your parents. You really don't have to give them nachas. You know, your mother wants you to be a doctor and you want to be an accountant. And forever she's going to be miserable that you weren't an accountant. You weren't a doctor. Doesn't mean you have to become a doctor. You know, that's not what you want to be. So that's all. So okay, Esav had these. So with Yatz, but what's more important is what I was trying to say is that when you're raising your children, you're trying to raise them beyond you're not raising them merely so they'll honor you. I hope you're not raising them so they'll respect you. You raise them, they'll be a good Eved Hashem. So what I'm saying is, if you love your kids, you have a good chance that beyond the covet they'll give you, they will honor Hashem too. They'll go beyond. They'll go beyond the simple Kibud Av V'Aim. And that's what Yaakov did. That came because of the love his mother showered upon him. That he did even, for sure he honored his mother, but beyond that, he did things that maybe he didn't halachically have to do. In terms of Kibud Av V'Aim, Yaakov did not have to go and dress up like his brother Esav. That's way beyond Kibud Av V'Aim. He could say, Mommy, I can't do it. That's it. Doesn't mean you didn't listen to your... Remember, Kibud Av V'Aim means when the parent says, do something for me. Get me a glass of water. Give me a seat. Take me to the doctor. That's Kibud Av V'Aim. That's the halachic Kibud Av V'Aim. Now you might be talking, you know, but parents say, you know, it would be best for you if you'd steig in learning. You know, just steig in learning. But the kid can't steig. It's hard for him to steig. He doesn't like to steig in learning. You're going to say he didn't honor his parents. But then it's the union of your union with Hashem. There's another inyan. Okay, now could be if a kid really senses his love from his parents so much, he'll go beyond kibud avim, and he'll do things that are beyond what he's required to do. So that's what Yaakov did. That's what Yaakov did. But you can't take away the basic mitzvah of kibud avim. Esav did. So you see a lot of the parameters of kibud avim based on what was considered covered, what is not considered covered. That's what Esav didn't have. What he had was kibud. What he didn't have, he didn't have. Anyway, with that little introduction, and it's a very hard concept here, loving Hashem. It's very, very hard to loving Hashem. This is not an easy concept at all, and it's no less difficult, if maybe more difficult than everything else. Why? It's very hard to love someone you've never met. At this point, you know, if you haven't fully developed this idea of the Hashem, if you don't feel that Hashem is the creator, you don't feel that Hashem is next to you, if you just know, right? Remember, coming back to the beginning of the book, you know, the assumption in this Sefer is you're reading the Sefer first, and then afterwards you're going to start the exercises. That's his assumption in the book. Listen, you know, this was written for yeshivisha guys, and they could, you know, read this book in a week. You know, then you go back and start again. But, you know, we got to take it slowly. But it's very hard to love a concept. It's very hard to love a concept. And as long as Hashem is a concept, it's very hard to love. And it's something that God expects us to be able to do. So this it's a very, very hard mitzvah. So let's begin. And let's see. And we will be on this for a while. We'll be on this at least till Hanukkah. Avas Hashem. Mitzvahs Avas Hashem. The mitzvah of loving Hashem. Ad ata osak nevini yir. Until now we've talked about yir of a program. Now with Hashem's help, we're going to begin the next few chapters on loving Hashem. Avas Hashem mitzvahs the same in deraisa. Loving Hashem is a biblical commandment. So already we see this is not, you know, a chumrah ba'alma. It's not lifni mishur sedin, go beyond the letter of law. This is as bread and butter as putting on tefillin as anything in the world is, and probably definitely more so. As it says, "Va'avta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levav, b'chol nafsh, b'chol moedecha." You should love Hashem with all your heart, all your soul, and all your resources. Kloimer, meaning to say, "Kol adam ve'adam miYisrael mechuyov lehov esbaro." Each and every Jew is obliged to love his Creator. Right? It's not a midas chasidus. You mamish, you have to love your Creator. Now, here is the beginning of the inherent contradiction, and this is what makes it so hard. I demand that you love me is an oxymoron. I mean, demand. You can demand me to get the groceries. You can demand me to go to work. You can demand a lot, but you can't demand me to love. Love is a feeling. It's a feeling that's there. I'm sorry, I wish I could love you, but you look ugly. Whenever I look at you, I get grossed out. You know, I just can't love you. And if you don't, you're not a good Jew. So, you know, we have a knee-jerk reaction that we never want to be forced into things, and certainly not forced into love. Especially nowadays, you know, it's no more the parents say, you're going to marry this girl and finished. Right? No, I'll decide who I'm going to marry. Because I'm going to decide who I love, right? Who you think you love, right? So, you know, love is something that's got to evolve. So how can Hashem command this? This is a very difficult concept over here. That's the tension in this mitzvah. And it's not just the mitzvah, it's one of the six constant mitzvahs. It's one of the six constant mitzvahs. You have to always be in this state of being in love with Hashem. So this is a very important mitzvah. And again, you can't go further. And as we've learned in this Sefer, if you can't get this love of Hashem, you'll never succeed as a Jew. You'll never succeed as a Jew. It's just not going to happen. Right? You know, to do all the things that Hashem wants from us, you can only do it if you love Hashem. Right? We'll move over to Svarim. Shibukomo Shibukom Mitzvah. Gam Be'avas Hashem Yeshem Darga Shainus. And the Svarim explained that just like in any other kind of mitzvah, there's different levels of fulfilling the mitzvah of loving Hashem. It's not all or nothing. There's minimum levels. There's a minimum level of fulfilling the mitzvah. Then there's the maximum level, like the Rambam says. The Rambam says that what is the love of Hashem? He describes it as a person who is lovesick for the object of their love, where the person can only think of their love all day long. Whatever they do, they think of their love. You know, when you're first infatuated with a person, and everything is that person, and nothing else. Everything reminds you of that person. So that's what has to be with Hashem 24/7. Right? That's the highest level. So there's lots of levels. But in general, he's going to tell you the two levels, and that's the ones we're going to work with. There's a love that depends on something, and there's a love that doesn't depend on anything. As the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, the love that David and Yonason had for each other was a love that didn't depend on anything. On the other hand, and that's, you know, loving the person for who the person is, and not for what they do for you. On the other hand, you have love that's what? That's tluyah, depends on something. That was the love of Amnon and Tamar. That Amnon, the half-brother of Tamar, he loved Tamar for one reason. She was beautiful. That's it. That was the reason why he loved her, and he couldn't stop thinking about her, because she was beautiful. When he found a way to take advantage of her, okay, so then he had what he wanted, and no more love. The mystery was gone, and he loved the mystery, the catch, and now that he got her, and that's it. So he didn't love her anymore. It was gone. So those are the two different kinds of love that exist, and we're going to see that we have to work on both of them, and we don't jump from one to the next. We've got to work on both of them. So now he begins to explain. A love that depends on something, and that's the good old-fashioned, you know, you do this for me, and that's why I love you. You keep doing it, I love you. You stop doing it, I don't love you. That's avatliya b'davar. He says, you have to start at that step. That has to be the first step. You don't jump to altruistic love. He be'etzem shoyrish avodasam shel umas olam. However, this is essentially the root of the service of the goyim. This is as far as a goy can go. A goy cannot go any further than that love. And it's Gemara, you're going to see. Can't argue. So as long as they get the flow from Hashem, as long as Hashem smiles on them, they're capable of loving Hashem. Not that all goyim anyway love Hashem, but the best they can do is get this kind of love. As soon as the flow stops, as soon as the market crashes, as soon as he lost his cushy job, but lava some, the love is finished. Ice love. That's it. They're not capable of this concept. Right? Hein kach mavur b'gemara. It's a Gemara. Shnei Mishnah, it says in a Mishnah. If it's a Gemara, you can't argue. Gemara tells you these are the equations of life. Ha'imar sela zulet staka. Person says, here's a selah I'm giving for tzedakah. I'm giving tzedakah, b'shvil sheyich b'ni, so that my son should live. Person's son, chas v'shalom, is very sick, is going to die. So the rabbi says, you know, maybe you should give tzedakah. Tzedakah tatzel mimavas. So you write a check for $50,000 to your local charitable organization. You said it should be a schus, that if my child should live, I'm giving the $50,000. Okay. Or, u'bishvil she'eskaba l'chayolam haba, or I should merit going to the world to come. Right? Harezet tzadik gomer. This guy is a tzadik gomer. It's a tzadik gomer. Then the Gemara makes one more point. But who dafka b'Yisrael, it's only by Yid who gives the tzedakah that way. V'lo b'nachron, but not by a goy. Gemara says this. And Rashi explains. So Pirush Rashi. Yisrael libel l'shamayim. The Jew, his heart is for heaven. The Marian love of, and if something bad will happen in his life, ain't a kare leiteger. He doesn't complain against Hashem. I don't know how the English will explain it, but he doesn't criticize Hashem. He doesn't get angry at Hashem. What does the English say on those words? Kare leiteger. What? You guys got the English. He doesn't what? Regret the grief. Okay, he doesn't regret it. Elatoyla yisur bavona, but he assumes that the suffering is for the sins that he did. Aval nachri, but a goy, he may not even look at him. If he doesn't get what he wants, kairetag, he regrets it. When things go bad, and they get upset. Think about it. Things go to goy. You know, when things don't go well, it doesn't need a big thing. They get so angry and they curse in their own God's name, using Yashka's name. Right? They curse using Yashka's name. Now, don't you know? Like, you ever think about it? Like, what do they mean when they're using it? It's a cursing Yashka. You know, Jesus, you're supposed to save me. What's that? Oh, Jesus! You know, God damn it! And all these expressions, you know, like what are they saying? They're really cursing God. They're really cursing God. What are you? That's what it really is, because you let me down, man. Right. So that is what a goy is, and there's a lot of reasons for this, which he explained a little better in the first sefer. But let's read a little bit more. Let's read just a little bit more first. Kloimer, meaning to say, Nachri muchan loses bitnai shumakabel. A goy is willing to give on a condition that I'm going to get something back. V'imboim elav yisurim, and now if suffering comes, and I've been a good Christian, he regrets the good things that he did. That's a love that depends on something. Mashenkin Yehudi on the other hand, a Jew. Because you know there's sell stock on Manasseh, when he gives a sell for tzedakah, on the condition that his child should live. Afilo, next page, Rish Dalet. Ima ben lo chai, even the child does not live. Kayim v'nishmasa, ratzon amiti, levis es HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is in his neshama level a true desire to love Hashem. Laseis kivyach l'varim, to give to Hashem. In other words, here's the difference. The deepest will of the Jew, if he knows it or not, is to give tzedakah. That's the way a Jew is built. A Jew is built to give tzedakah. Really, you didn't want to give tzedakah. Okay, there's a Yetzirah, and there's this and that, that makes it a little more challenging, but really, every Yid wants to give tzedakah. And you'll never find a Yid who regretted giving tzedakah in his life. Really, you know, even if things don't go out, at the end of the day, if let's say somebody was sick and they gave tzedakah and then a person died, and during the shiva you'd ask, do you regret giving them money? He'll never say, I regret giving them money. 99% will never regret giving them money. Why? You know, his it might be his son's life was the motivation to do the mitzvah. Maybe we would normally lack the motivation to do the mitzvah. And now that his son is dying, so he gave a lot of money to tzedakah, and that motivated him to do a proper mitzvah, but he doesn't regret doing the mitzvah. Because the Yid is inextricably bound to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, the goy doesn't work that way. The goy, it's a deal. I really don't want to give tzedakah. Okay, if this is the only way that he's going to live, then I'll give tzedakah. And if he doesn't live, then I regret giving the tzedakah, and I want my money back. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's a halacha. Gemara is saying this is a reality. You have to realize a goy's love can only go so far, and because remember there's these concepts. You know, with Yidden there's an idea of Yisrael v'Raisa v'Kutshim Bricha Chadu. The Jews, Hashem and the Torah are one. We're always at one with Hashem. Our neshamas come from the highest place. Our neshamas are right next to Hashem. And being right next to Hashem, as we said, love really means love. Ahava is the gematria 13. Echad is gematria 13. Love really means being bound up with the other being. And that's the way we are. It's the way we're built. You know, we just got to come back to that. Come to that realization of who we really are. That's all we have to really do. On the other hand, the goy, we say, goy, they come from the alma de preda, the world of separateness. We come from the alma de yehuda, from the world of unity. Right, so you know we don't need to create a belief in a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's essentially there. The soul is naturally connected to Hashem, so we're capable of much deeper aspects of love than a goy is ever capable of doing. So since a goy can never really feel that close to Hashem, so what relationship can he have? It's a quid pro quo. Okay, I do for you, you do for me. That's going to be our relationship. But with Yidden, it goes way beyond that. So that's step one. So let's just finish this last little thing here. Shnei koyches elu, these two forces. Ava tluya b'davar, ava sheina tluya b'davar. A love that depends on something, a love that doesn't depend on anything. Tamuri b'chol nefesh and nefesh is in each and every soul. And the service of a person is to arouse. In other words, it's not something you have to achieve from outside of you, it's something that's inside of you. The Balatanya says that every Jew has an ava misuteris, has a hidden love, and would be willing to give up his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu when the moment comes. When the moment comes. You know, the most distant Jew hundreds of years ago, you know, by and large, would give up his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even though he might not live his life according to the way Hashem wants, but he'll die for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it's sleeping inside there. The fact that, you know, Yidden are going so far away from Yiddishkeit, they're losing their Yiddishkeit. Right? But sometimes you need something to wake up the heart, to feel that love. That's all that's missing in a Jew. You have to wake up the heart. Right? And there are two levels. Sha'ava, it's the last point. Vare sha'ava shenet lui v'dover, hinei madrega vo yosem ha'ava lui v'dover. Certainly a love that's altruistic is beyond a self-serving love. But still, in kein derech avodahi lahaskel koidim ha'ava lui v'dover, mishom las ha'ava shenet lui v'dover. But the pathway we have to take to learn how to love Hashem, we start with loving Hashem for ulterior motives, and once we've accomplished that, and believe it or not, we're pretty far away from that even. And then to get to the altruistic. We have these big ideas, altruistic, I'm never going to get there, so I don't even start. But believe me, as soon as we talk tomorrow, we don't even love Hashem for selfish reasons. It's just not there. The biggest proof is we don't do what Hashem wants us to do. You know, on a simple level, do what Hashem wants you to do because He's going to give you good stuff. No. So we'll see, and that's going to be the discussion tomorrow, Mitzvah.